And as I already mentioned to most of you, only recently, I think on Wednesday afternoon, come back from visiting Hong Kong and also Sydney, Australia Sangha Association AGM. I still keep myself very busy, but sometimes I don't feel busy. Weird. But what is busyness? Is that a perception or a reality? A lot of times people love to blame things like health on being too busy. But I've also noticed when you haven't got much to do, many people seek things, something to do. It's almost like we disturb our peace and want to be busy. I've often wondered why that is. It's because we're scared of peace. It's like if we're very peaceful, it's like we're not doing anything. It's like there must be something wrong with us. But please know that you produce so much more, achieve so much more, the more peaceful you are. Does that make sense to you? Let's explain it. I look at my own life. I spend hours and hours and hours sitting on my cushion in a cave or in a room here or somewhere. And sometimes I think, I'm not doing very much. But if I look at how much I do in a year or in many years, built many monasteries, many sanghas, done a lot to help our Buddhist society in West Australia, be one of the biggest in the world. I know that because I go overseas, you see it. And just how much it's connected with so many people overseas. I have these wonderful experiences. One of the reasons, it's not really a reason why I go overseas to teach, but even when I was in Hong Kong, I was quietly having my lunch. Somebody was sponsoring my lunch in a little restaurant in they call it Kennedy Town. It's over in Hong Kong Island. And when I was having my lunch there, this lady walked past, a young lady, and she looked, pressed her head against the window to look, because she recognized me. And she had an English husband who encouraged her, go in and make sure, see if it really is him. And it was like being a pop star. She came in there and said, you're Ajahn Brahm. Oh, I'm so excited. That's what she actually said. And her partner said, oh, she listens to you all the time. And she said, thank you so much. And I was just trying to have a quiet lunch. I know you can't have a quiet lunch here in Australia. There's too many people trying to come and talk to you. But I'd never expected this, in Hong Kong. And why? Because, somehow or other, when you talk, you can connect to people and solve some of their really important problems. So the talk which I really wanted to give this evening is because I've seen this in places like Hong Kong and many other places in the world, is anxiety. People have far too much fear of the future. And sometimes it's a fear which never actually manifests. So how can I actually prove that? And actually, how can we deal with sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, you don't know what it's like. I've been around a long time now, and I think I know what many things are like. But I also know just how anxiety causes the very things which one is afraid of. And to start the talk, there's one of my old stories, which I saw on British TV when I was still a student. And that was I was a Buddhist when I was 16, but what do you do if you were a Buddhist in London at 16 years of age? I didn't know where to go or what to do. You know, I should have been much smarter and just looked in the yellow pages, be for Buddhist or something, but I never thought about that. So anyway, there was a TV series on called Kung Fu. And I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember that. And there was this blind master and little grasshopper. And Grasshopper, being his student, was learning, you know, about, you know, your mind, how it works, and how to deal with difficulties and problems in life. One of my favorite episodes, which I will never ever forget, in fact, I did write about that in one of the books which I composed. It was when little Grasshopper was taken into this darkened room by his master. He said, "Little Grasshopper, I think you're ready for this little lesson. Walk to the center of the room slowly. Allow your eyes to accommodate to the very little light. What do you see?" And little Grasshopper walked very carefully, mindfully, you might say. And little Grasshopper said, that was this his disciple's name, "I see a lake, like a swimming pool. Be careful. Don't go too close to the edge, but just have a look in. What do you see on the bottom of that swimming pool?" "I see bones, Master. Human bones. Leg bones, rib bones, even skulls." "Exactly, little Grasshopper, because that isn't a swimming pool full of water. That's a swimming pool filled with strong, concentrated acid." And I hope you haven't heard this recently. I hope you're getting scared like I was getting scared. "What else do you see?" "I see a plank of wood stretching from one side of the swimming pool to the other side." "Yes, little Grasshopper. Exactly 7 days from now, you will have to walk on that plank from one side to the other side of the pool of strong acid. And if you don't make it, your bones will join all the other bones in the bottom of that pool." I was young at the time, maybe about 19, but even I was scared. But the master said, "Look, you don't have to worry so much. Don't be anxious, because in the courtyard there is another plank of wood, exactly the same length, the same thickness, the same width, but on two blocks of concrete. All you need to do is to practice. For the next 7 days, you don't have to do anything else except practice your balance. You don't have to do any chanting, don't have to do any ceremonies, just practice your balance." So little Grasshopper was just practicing his balance every day until he could walk across that plank of wood blindfold or backwards. He could run across it. He could just hop on one leg. But when the day came, when the test would be performed, little Grasshopper was not so confident. When he was taken into this dark and spooky room, across this pool of death, he didn't want to go. You could see on the little black and white TV which I had, he turned around to his master and said, "Please, don't make me go." At least that's what his face said. "Go, little Grasshopper." So little Grasshopper put his foot upon the plank. And there's one thing which you should all know. A plank of wood of a certain length, a certain width, a certain thickness over the courtyard was much wider and shorter than the same size over a pool of acid. That little length of wood stretched like forever for poor little frightened grasshopper. "Walk!" shouted the master. I hope you haven't actually got a copy of that, because there's many things in my stories I add a little bit every time. I know someone said this, I don't know if it's a good Buddhist saying, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story. But anyhow, little grasshopper. He started walking. And as he was walking, I just noted, at the time, I remember this, even I was getting anxious, and I was just sitting in a small apartment in London. I wasn't in danger, but nevertheless, the scene evoked anxiety even in me. And as he was walking, you could see he started off confidently. When he got to about a third way across, you could see that his feet weren't as firm as they were at the beginning. You see, he started to shake a little bit. And as he got closer to the middle, he started to even sway. He was losing his balance. And then, I couldn't believe it. It looked like he was going to fall in. I always remembered, this is one of the reasons why I don't recommend watching TV, because that's when they stopped for the commercial break. I thought that was very sadistic. If I had a Buddhist TV channel, I would never do that. Out of compassion, we just finish off and get the unimportant cartoons, not cartoons, ads to the very end. So we had to do these ads about what's the best toothpaste or the best, I don't know. And this is, you know, one of my heroes. Lives were at stake. Who cares about what soap powder washes whiter? Poor old grasshopper, his bones would be really white in a few moments. So anyway, as I noticed, whenever you have these, in those days, the ads, they'd always go back a few seconds before the ad actually kicked in. So I saw grasshopper on the same plank of wood, starting to get very unsure, and his legs started to go weak. He started to sway, and it looked like he was going to fall in. And he did fall in. Went splash into the pool of acid. And this compassionate teacher, be careful what I ever tell you to do, okay? This compassionate teacher didn't go in to try and save him, just laughed his head off. So much for wise teachers. Actually, he was wiser than I thought. Because little grasshopper was splashing around. It wasn't burning him at all. He didn't know why, he was really confused. And that's when the master said, "It's only water, little grasshopper, it's just water. We just threw the bones in there for special effects." And then little grasshopper understood the lesson. I understood the lesson as well. Why did you fall in, little grasshopper? Fear pushed you in. Anxiety made you unsteady. The thing you are most afraid of, falling in. That's what happened, because anxiety pushed you in. And that's such an amazing story, which I'd always remember to this day. It's anxiety. Why do we get anxious? A lot of times, it is not the best way of dealing with the problem. When we get anxious, we tense up, we don't see things as they really are, we see all the things which might go wrong. We never see the things which might go right. And basically, I'm not able to predict the future. Why do you think you are? We think, oh my goodness, this is going to be terrible. You make it terrible. You add to the suffering and the problems with anxiety. Only fear pushes you in. And to understand the truth of that is far more true than you can ever imagine. Often when I'm sitting here, I tell you the power of the human mind. Because we meditate first of all, and you go on some of these retreats, if you can find a place to come on these retreats, always well booked out. But if you can, you understand the power of this thing we call the human mind. And I'm going to say this story, which I've said many times, about the hypnotist who touched, you know, when I was at university, he touched one of the students who was put under hypnosis with a nails on the end of a piece of wood, a 4-inch nail. He said, "This 4-inch nail has been heated, it's red hot." And he touched this nail on the student's skin. What happened? Student screamed in pain. You can imagine that. That makes sense to me. The student, under hypnosis, was convinced this nail was red hot, and he screamed. But what really challenged me was when a blister came up. And that didn't make any sense to me. Now, one was just imagination, mind, you know, you like it, you don't like it. You scream if it's in great pain, but that's your wound coming up on his skin. I thought that was impossible. There was no heat on that nail. It was just, you can touch it, even a baby could touch it. But nevertheless, a wound happened. And that just opened up. And when you see it with your own eyes, it's kind of opened up how powerful this mind actually is. And if it can sort of fear can make things which shouldn't happen happen, actually happen. The one thing we should really be afraid of is fear itself and anxiety. Every time we have this attitude, oh, something's going to go wrong, something's going to go wrong, then it does go wrong more often than you'd think. Someone told me years ago, the most scary thing a human being can do is give a talk in public. And that's my life. I'm always giving a talk somewhere in Hong Kong or in Sydney a few days ago. And even when I came back from Sydney in the afternoon, really tired, bit jet lag, 3 hours difference in New South Wales, the monks asked me, "Do you want to give a talk?" I said, "Okay, why not?" What's the difference between just being around a coffee table and talking to your friends and sitting in front of a microphone and talking to your friends? You're my friends. If you don't like it, there's the door. At least you're not allowed. You know why in many auditoriums you're not allowed to bring in any food? That's so you don't have anything to throw at the speaker when he tells them. That's the same bad joke which you heard yesterday. I was going to say last week, but they're usually much more common telling of bad jokes again. But nevertheless, it's the fear, the anxiety actually stop people performing. And when was the last time you saw me anxious before I give a talk? Have you ever been anxious when you're having a cup of coffee with your best friend? You're not anxious at all, you're just enjoying each other's company. And honestly, that's how I deal with any fear of public talking. I'm enjoying your company here and having a bit of fun at the same time. Years and years and years ago when I started teaching, you know, to undercut all anxiety, what I decided, look, if people come to my talks and they like the talks, then the committee of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia will invite me to give the next week's talks as well. But if I really stuff up this week, you'll have to find somebody else to come next week. And that'll be even better. I can have a nice retreat. Relax. Okay, so we'll see what happens next week. You won't be back. But it's not just, you know, with giving talks. When you relax, you don't ask anything back. I relax. The talks become much better when you don't sort of put so much tightness and tension on yourself. And that is actually how I was taught by Ajahn Chah to teach, or rather to present talks. You know what he did one day? It was the full moon day in February, what they call Maga Puja in Thailand. It's also, they celebrate that in Cambodia and many other Buddhist countries, the full moon day in February. And so we all had to go to their big monastery in Wat Pa Phong. And there was, you know, some of our monks were there very recently, went for a visit. Big monastery, lots of monks there. In that day, maybe about 60 or 70 monks for the day. And then so many, couple of thousand. This was in 1980 or something. Lots of monks there, lots of about 2,000 or 3,000 lay people there. And they all did, you know, the ceremonies, the chanting and stuff. And then what would you expect? You'd expect Ajahn Chah, the famous monk, to give this important talk on the full moon day of February. And it was an important occasion. That's what people expected, him to give the talk. But Ajahn Chah, this is what he did that evening. He did it quite often. He looked down the line of monks with his eyes. And he went that past all the senior monks and got to the middle monks, past the middle monks to the junior monks. I think I had about 4 years as a monk at that time. He went to me and I was very anxious. Please, eyes, carry on. He went past me. His eyes went down towards the end, like, phew, that was a close call. And then his eyes went back up again. And I'm only telling this story because he stopped at me. Brahma Wangso, get up and give the talk in Thai. Whoa, that was a tough one. For 1 hour, I had to give a talk in Thai language to all these couple of thousand lay people who came to the monastery for the special evening talk on one of the biggest ceremonies of the year. Worse than that, your teacher was listening to you. But anyway, I thought, first of all, well, he told me to do it, it's his fault. So I had no responsibility. Just like this morning, there was some Sri Lankans came to offer dana, and they had the kids were there, and the kids were like doing NAPLAN tests this morning or something. And as they were doing this NAPLAN test this morning, I said, look, you don't have to worry about anything. Don't be anxious. They said, but it's a test. We've got to do well. I said, look, it's your teacher's fault if you don't do well. It's not your fault. You know, they're the ones responsible for your education, not you. They kind of like that argument. And it's true, isn't it? If you don't do very well at school, your teachers, they're to blame. That makes sense? So any of the monks or the nuns at Dharamsala, the ones I've ordained and taught, and even you, those of you who've been on my retreat, if you don't get no deep meditation, whose fault is it? So don't be anxious. People just take too much responsibility for their own. Is it your weakness? I know some people have said that. If ever you're, I shouldn't say this, but I started already. If your mother and father complains about you, say, well, you gave me the genes, it's not my fault. So anyway, why is it that most things which we are anxious about, afraid of, is our performance? A lot of times people are way too critical of themselves. I don't know if you ever tried this, but when you're a group of friends and sit around a table and just when you're relaxing and ask your friends, now what do you think of me? And write it down on a piece of paper. And then you write down what you think of them. As honestly as you possibly can. Give it to the other person. The first time I did that, I was really surprised. Is that what you think of me, really? I said, yeah. This is what I think of you. No way. What that did was actually inform me how I assumed my friend was looking at all my faults. I could see them, and I thought that everybody else could see them. That's what I thought they thought of me. But they thought something much kinder than I ever thought about myself. A good friend would actually be much more honest than you can be about how good you are, how bad you are, or whatever. And I was surprised. Why was I more critical of myself than even a good friend? I say a good friend because sometimes when people are just in a bad mood or they're tired, even there was one of these guys I met in Hong Kong. He was very wealthy. And I mentioned to him, instead of just keeping the wealth in the bank, why didn't you start a retreat center in Hong Kong? But I said, not a meditation retreat center, a sleep center. All I want you to do is actually to find a place where you've got really comfortable beds, really good food, no TV or limited internet access. So all you do there is just go to bed and catch up on your sleep with no other responsibilities at all. Single rooms with nice en-suites so you can just have nothing to prove, nothing to defend, just sleep. And this rich guy said, I don't know if I've got the effort to build it, but I'll certainly go there if there was one. That's the trouble with Jhana Grove Retreat Center. We actually do things there like meditate. Imagine. Just imagine you have this lovely center, not expensive, and all you do there is have a nice bed. You can get up, no alarm clocks or bells. You can get up whenever you wish. And when you get up, you can have breakfast or lunch or dinner. Just don't worry about the time of the day. And then you can go back to bed again afterwards. You can go for a walk if you wish, but just a nice place where you can truly relax. A sleep retreat. Okay, now, how many of you would like to go there? Me too. I would like to. Because so sometimes we're tired, and sometimes just to be able to sleep, to be able to relax, to be able just to go to a place where nothing is asked of you, where you can accept yourself and your condition of your body. You're not anxious what other people think of you. You're not anxious at all. You don't have to prove anything. We learn anxiety when we're really young. How did you go at school today? Oh, terrible, mummy. Don't ever do that again. You know that story where I was a school teacher for 1 year, but still, on one of my classes, that when I gave out the end of year report card, you know, one of my students in the class of 30, one of my students came bottom of the class. One person had to come bottom of the class. Doesn't matter how intelligent you are, you can't always be top of the class. One has to come bottom of the class. And I don't know why people feel that's a great failure. You've heard me say before, if you get an F at school, what does F mean? Fantastic. So anyway, the kid came bottom of the class. They knew I was a Buddhist. What do you do with someone who comes bottom of the class? You could see they started to get depressed. That's what school does. Grading people. Assessing people. Someone has to come bottom. And when they do, you can see their shoulders slum, their head goes down. And look at their body language. They start, you don't need to actually read their mind. You can imagine what they must be thinking. Have you ever come bottom of the class? If you haven't, you've missed out on life. So this kid is about 13 or 14. When I gave him his report card, I had to sort of, I couldn't resist just letting him suffer like that. That's not my character. I can't do that. I said to him, you know, this young boy, he said, I know you, that, you know, you did this on purpose, didn't you? You came bottom of the class in maths because you are a good bodhisattva. The word bodhisattva is Mahayana Buddhism. It means somebody who sacrifices their own happiness and well-being to save their friends and companions from having to suffer. You took this position on purpose, so your friends don't have to face what you're going to face tonight from your mum and dad when they found out you come bottom. You're a hero. You did this on purpose. I know you. You're much better than this, but you decided to deliberately fail this exam so no one else of your friends has to fail. And I'm going to go to the principal's office straight after this class finishes, and I'm going to recommend you for the prize in the school prize giving of Bodhisattva of the Year Award. And I think I'm looking at some of your faces, and that's kind of like he looked at me. Who is this crazy teacher who's been teaching us? He laughed, and I laughed too. And I did add the proviso that it said, in this school, you're only allowed to win the Bodhisattva Award once. So next year you do so much better. I know you can do that. All that did was to take away his idea that he'd failed. This idea that he wasn't good enough. That somehow or other he was discriminating against himself. I'm not good enough because I failed. That's what anxiety is. That causes the anxiety. You can't stand that feeling of rejection, that feeling of not being good enough, that feeling of being different, that feeling of just, I've fallen into the pool of acid. And the wisdom of that master in that TV show, Kung Fu, was showing it's not acid, you don't burn. It's not a problem at all. But the fear that it's a problem creates a problem. So whenever you're anxious, honestly, NAP plan, if you fail the NAP plan test, you fail the year 12s, the year 11s, how many kids who failed university became billionaires? Steve Jobs, I think even Albert Einstein, Michael Dell, Mark Zuckerberg. If you've got a kid and not doing well at university, don't interfere. They could be the next billionaire. And mummy and daddy won't have to work again. In our committee, we can build whatever we want. You see, when you turn it around, look at it a different way, ba 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 ba, I jump on. And I go, ba ba ba, back to you. So you have all these other things which we're anxious about. Anxious of losing your job. Are you anxious of losing your job? And how many people come and complain they work too hard, they've got no time to come on a meditation retreat, they've got no time to do this, got no time to do that. If you lose your job, you have all this time. So any of you who have lost your job recently, listen. This is meant to be. This is, you know, from the heavenly beings they made you lose your job. You know why? So you can join our committee of a Buddhist society in Western Australia. A lot of the time I ask people, can you join our committee and do this and that? I said, no, I'm too busy. Now you've got no excuse. join our committee because you've lost your job. All for a purpose. There's always meaning towards everything. If you think right. So you can see that's one reason to overcome anxiety. A lot of things we're afraid of. You know, that what I was mentioning over in Hong Kong was, you know, the two bad bricks in the wall story. That's such a simple story, and I say it every other week, but it's a powerful story. And a lot of times I do my research and I ask people, am I telling those stories too much? And they say, no, we need to be reminded. The two bad bricks in the wall, in this context of anxiety, we look at the future and we just see the mistakes which might happen, which are real, it could happen. But how many of us look into the future and look at the beautiful things which might happen? The wonderful things, the kind things, the compassionate things. Look in the future with a positive mind state. To be kind to the future. Because sometimes people say, no, you've got to be kind to beings or people. No, you can be kind to things and to concepts as well. You know the kindness to things story. Just out here one evening on a Saturday, the youth group had just finished their meeting together. And after they'd finished, they were supposed to go to the beach. It was the summertime. You know, part of actually being a Buddhist is not just being monks and nuns and meditating. It's actually finding good friends. Not all of you will ordain. And some of you are losing your hair. But, you know, some of you want to find nice partners in life. So, you know, encouraging them going down to the beach, you know, for some fellowship. And the car was stuck right in front of our hall here. What's wrong? And they said, well, we've got all the stuff in the boot of the car, but they can't open the boot of the car. They put the key in, but it won't turn. And they asked me, Ajahn Brahm, you're a big monk. Can you please use your powers to open the open the boot of the car? Should I? Should I be anxious? Maybe I fail, and then I lose my reputation. If it opens, then I get another reputation. Whenever any of you get your boot locked in the car, you'd ask me. So what I did? The lady who asked, she's not here this evening. I'm just quickly looking, make sure. Some of you know her. You know Veronica, Ronnie. I'll always remember this. I said, I will open the boot of that car if you promise you'll become a bhikkhuni, a fully ordained Buddhist nun. She was a really bit sort of heedless. So she said, yes, okay. She said, if you open the boot of the car, I'll become a Buddhist nun. So I asked for the key, put it in the lock, turned the lock, and it opened straight away. Honestly, it did. She was the one who was anxious now. Ah, I don't want to become a nun. She never needed to be anxious because in our youth group, we got people from all sorts. We're talking about over in the ASA conference, that was in the Nantian temple, you know, the Fokwang Shan Mahayana nuns there. And they were also complaining, we can't get young people to join up. This is how you get young people to join up. Make a promise, they'll become a bhikkhuni if we can open the boot of their cars. Anyway, so I had her. she'd have to become a bhikkhuni. But you know what? Eventually I was outdone. There was one of the other members of our youth group was a trainee lawyer. Never trust lawyers. I shouldn't say that. I said it now. And the trainee said, yes, she said she'd become a bhikkhuni, but she didn't specify which lifetime. That was good. Why do we always think we can predict the future? And we always think what we predict is something terrible. That's one of the reasons why. You know, you can't predict the future at all. You know all those stories. What's going to happen to you? I can predict your future. If you promise you become a bhikkhuni, then I can predict your future, and I guarantee it will be absolutely true. Because Ajahn Chah used to do this. to cut the narrative short, he decided to read the lines on somebody's hand. Have you heard about that? You can actually predict the future by seeing what lines you have on your hand and which way they go. I remember him doing this. Ajahn Chah was really fun to be with. He was innovative. And he said, no other monk's done this before. These are not supposed to. It's against our rules. But he did this. He read this man's future by the tracing the lines on the palm of his hand. And this guy was just so excited, so wound up. Really? You're going to tell my future? Yes. And look, I'm a very good monk. I won't lie. Yes, I know. This is so exciting. What's my future going to be? When he finished, he told this man, your future. Say, yeah. And I won't make a mistake. Yes, I know. Get on with it. Your future, sir, is uncertain. And that's not just a joke. That has really very deep meaning. The future, your future, each one of you, is uncertain. It's work in progress. You can mess around with your future. Change it this way and that way, whichever you really have the wisdom and the kindness to do. And look, to being serious, I've seen this so many times. There's so many people who should be dead, cancers and all sorts of other diseases, and they're not. You know one of those stories, one of many, that a few years ago I was called up to go to the ICU in Royal Perth Hospital. There was an elderly Chinese gentleman who was in a coma, was dying. And the family just almost, they said, please come as soon as possible. We don't know how long this fellow's got to live. And so I went in there and I rushed, you know, all the way from Bodhinyana Monastery to Royal Perth, and then went into the ICU. And I never actually talked, you know, to the family. But, you know, I was told that these were all his family from all over the world had come, you know, to the senior member of their family one last time, basically to see him off. And they only found out afterwards they'd already arranged the funeral. He wasn't dead yet, but his death was certain. It was sure. They didn't understand the power of the Buddhist monks. It's a wonderful experience of uncertainty. So I went there and did the chanting. I must have been in a really, you know, powerful mood that day. And I chanted and I chanted and I chanted. He came out of coma. He survived. And I really thought, wow, it's like miraculous. I thought, they're going to be so happy with me. They were not happy. They told me off. Usually they give these little donations afterwards. I got no donation at all. what they told me. He said, look, you know, we've taken time off work. We're just big businessmen. And we, you know, we lost a lot of money coming all the way over here. We arranged a funeral already. We have to cancel that. And he's old anyway. It'll only be another 6 months or so. We'll have to come back again. But next time, we're not inviting you. And it was from that experience that these days, whenever I have to go into a hospital to chart for somebody, I always ask them, what type of charter do you want, please? Die peacefully or get better, chart. I got to know. It's your mistake for not telling me. Because life and death are uncertain. How can you be anxious about something you don't know? So that's one of the reasons why all the anxiety which people have is overdone. The end of the world. Are you afraid of the end of the world? If it is the end of the world, you don't have to be afraid. No one's going to be here afterwards. So don't be afraid of the end of the world. Losing your job. Losing, I don't know, your health. If you lose your health, you can get it back again. Can you? Why do we assume too much? So a lot of time when work, so the future is work in progress. That shows you there's many things you still can do. So instead of just getting worried, anxious, and allowing that to push you in to this pool of acid, which is only water, we can look at life in a totally different way. Instead of being anxious, knowing there's nothing to be afraid about. Life, death, success or failure, that's part of the world. It's not really part of you. You're different. You're immune. You give it your best shot and see what happens. That's all you can do. And you can enjoy failure all the way to the morgue. Did you hear that? In other words, there is nothing called failure. You may say that. Wise people will never say that. You gave it your best, you learned so much. Wonderful, well done. You don't have to be afraid of anything. Are you afraid of letting go of anxiety? Can you live without it? Already addicted to anxiety? That's one of the reasons why apparently we've just installed these automatic lights around our center over here. Oh, there's nothing to be anxious about here now. And what about snakes? Are you afraid of snakes? Don't have to worry, they're all Buddhist snakes here by now. We've been here such a long time. Robbers? Bandits? They're just teaching you how to let go. Okay, I think I better stop soon, otherwise I'm going to get into really big trouble. Our monastery was robbed a few years ago. You remember that story? That some robbers, they went into our workshop and stole all of these expensive tools like chainsaws and generators and other swords we used to build our monastery. And the first thing I said to the monks when I found out, we had a meeting afterwards, please, people can steal your possessions, but never let them steal your happiness and your goodness. That's your most important possession, if you call it possession. Your forgiveness, your peace, your happiness. You don't have to allow anybody to steal that. And anyway, when we found out exactly what was stolen, and we claimed for insurance, which we got the full insurance payment, thanks to our good ops manager. And when we had all this money, we got everything which was stolen. You know, we managed to get new ones instead of an old chainsaw, which was really just, you know, on its last legs, we got a new one instead. Much more efficient, much better. Generators, the old ones were really noisy. These were state-of-the-art ones we got. We replaced everything. We had something left over as well. It was actually quite a good deal. And I'm still trying to find that thief so I could actually bow to him or say thank you and invite him back again. Of course, you can't do that, but just you can get the idea, the attitude there. Well, I'd be anxious instead of have some fun instead. Thank you all for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now my anxiety really starts. The questions. Did you like that talk? So you should send me overseas more often. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Here we go. Oh, good. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, this is good. We've got one from Ireland, one from Bolivia, one from Poland, one from Malta. Nothing from Hong Kong. From Ireland. Do you know what day it is on Sunday? St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. So happy St. Patrick's Day from Ireland. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I love BSWA online Sangha, but I feel I need an in-person Sangha for my practice. But there isn't anything near me. What do you suggest? Thank you very much. Come to Perth. That's, you know, the interfaith wisdom which I learned. If the mountain, if was it if Mohammed won't go to the mountain has to come to Mohammed. I know that's Islam, but from Ireland, if you would like an online Sangha, but you need an in-person Sangha for my practice, come to Australia. It's a very lovely place. We like Irish people. So that's my solution. If that doesn't work, solution number two is come to Australia, ordain as a monk, and then you can go back again after a while. If that doesn't work, I don't know what else to say. Anyway, there are some sanghas over in UK. I think that's the closest. And to let you know, I think it was a couple of days ago, you know, that we transferred the money from, I've won so many, my fingers are in so many pies. This was the Anukampa Bhikkhuni project, the nuns' monastery just outside of Oxford. Beautiful location. And they finally, I think, did the transfer of money and the transfer of deeds. It's now been secured. The first Bhikkhuni monastery in UK. You're just going to sit there like that, and you're going to clap or say, yay! So that's not that far away from Ireland and to Oxford, when it's closer than Perth anyway. From Bolivia, what is Sampajanya, or clear comprehension? Why did it go together in Sati Sampajanya? Sampajanya literally means with wisdom, with understanding. It's like Sam plus Pajanya. And Pajanya is shortened to Panya, mostly. When you understand Pali Sanskrit, it's pretty easy to understand. In the context of Satipatthana, it means to doing things, but understanding why you're doing it. What's the purpose of it? You're not just meditating. Like some people practice meditation or mindfulness training so they can shoot bullets at the enemy with more accuracy. That is not with wisdom at all. So instead, why are we doing this? You know, to create a better human being, a better world, a better community. That's the Sampajanya, the why you're doing this, the wisdom which should always go together with mindfulness. And in my particular case, I emphasize to have that kindness. When you have that kindness, which is wisdom, then you find the mindfulness is easier to do and more powerful in its results. You can never open the boot of a car without kindness. I don't know if other people experience that, but no, sometimes when I was working hard over in Bodhinyana Monastery, basically building it, we had a cement mixer. And you know, half that monastery was built with that cement mixer. And sometimes when it got old, no one else could get it to work. I could always get it to work. It's kind of weird. It was like we had a relationship together. And sometimes I would just, you know, be kind to it, like even stroke it. I know you've done a lot of cement in your life, cement mixer, but just we really need to make this hut for another monk. It would work. Have you ever seen that with like kindness and machines? I have, and it's just wonderful to be able to realize that the world is not just science. And I was a theoretical physicist, remember. There's much more to it than just cause and effect. It's just the mental cause and effect is also important. Anyway, from Poland, I have to meet at the lawyer's office with a person who caused me pain in the past. I've already forgiven them, but fear that this meeting may reopen old wounds. How to prepare myself? Start to maybe think that the fear that the old memories will not open old wounds. That's also a possibility. Keep your mind open to the positive possibilities. I often say always be positive, but I must admit when I went to this ASA conference over in Sydney, I couldn't be positive. I had to do a COVID test before they'd let me in. So I decided now I'll be negative. And I was. So someone who caused you pain in the past, that is the past, for goodness sake. Don't be a prisoner of your past. Say they caused me pain in the past, but why do they have to cause me pain in the present? It's not always, they look the same person, but they change, just like the river. You see the Swan River, the Thames River, or whatever river you're living close to. It looks the same, but it's actually totally different. The water has flown through. Learning, change has happened. Lastly, from Malta. Monastics cannot dance, nor swim, or run. Yet physical activity is a form of kindfulness to oneself. Depends how old you are. Is physical activity kind to me? You know, honestly, I like being a rebel. And sometimes just meditation is a far better health practice than, say, running or walking. Shall we prove it? Okay, I don't know where you're from, but do you want to run home tonight? I'll just sit here. Do you agree I win? Yeah, okay. I haven't told this story for a long time. I told this over in Hong Kong. There was this guy, he was a minister in the Thai government many, many decades ago, hundreds of years ago. And he was really smart. He was so smart that everyone else was jealous of him. The king always preferred this minister's advice than anybody else. So you know what it's like in politics? They decided to gang up to get rid of this guy. He was always embarrassing them. So they decided to challenge him. So in the morning, in front of the king, they said, "Your minister, you're so lucky to have such a wise and experienced minister. You know, he knows everything." And the minister said, "Yeah, that's true." He was so arrogant. And the other minister said, "He probably knows how to read our minds." And he said, "Yes, I do." He'd fallen into their trap. They'd already agreed. Even if he could read their minds, even if he said exactly what they were thinking, they would deny it. How can you prove what a person is thinking? So he said, yes, I can read all your minds. So what are we thinking? And then this minister said, actually, every one of you is thinking the same thing. You're always thinking kind and benevolent and loyal thoughts towards His Majesty. And I said, yes. It's amazing, you read our minds. Of course they weren't thinking that at all. But to deny that would put them in big trouble. Anyway, here we go. Monastics cannot dance, nor swim, nor run. Actually, if you're living in a monastery, like, which is next to a big lake, like there was one monastery in Thailand, which was on a peninsula, and so they had to learn how to swim. That was just out of safety, but not out of fun. Dance, I think I did mention when we do circumambulations in the forest sometimes over in Thailand, we step on these biting ants. Then you can see monks dance. Run. Actually, that even if it's like a bushfire, you're always told not to run. Because when you're running, you're more liable to fall over. A form of activity is a form of kindfulness to oneself. Some Buddhist monks are martial arts experts. Ooh, you better look after them. How do monastics keep fit? A lot of times we do like some work in monasteries, build monasteries. And just even just walking is a very good exercise. Especially if you see our monasteries, they're always on hills. So even here, tomorrow morning, from 8, no, what was it, no. What time is it, Bindabata? 7, we leave? About 7.15. 7.15, sometimes 7.20. We do a walk around the suburbs of Nolamara. It's called Bindabata, arms round. And it's such a beautiful thing. I should have advertised this a long time ago. A few people come either right in front here, we walk around the suburbs, around the suburb, and we have an arms round. Such a beautiful Asian thing to do, but it's great in Australia as well. And people just have a little gift of food and they put it in the monk's bowl. It's not that we need more feeding, but it's just a beautiful way of connecting. So that's the morning alms round. If anybody lives over here in Nolamara, it's a great thing to be able to do. I'm not saying that because I need more food, I've got too much, but the kindness, the tradition. And you've seen that in many Asian countries, especially places like Thailand, but also in Sri Lanka as well. So if ever you want to do that on a Saturday morning, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. Okay. Quick, any questions from the floor here? Going, going. Eddie, you can ask a question. That's a surprise.
I want to say something, Ajahn Brahm.
Okay, go on, yeah, sure.
Ajahn Brahm, you know, in order to deal with anxiety, you think we should bring in stress too, you know, to get a distinction? Don't you think, Ajahn Brahm, stress is the longer term thing, you know? Stress is dealing with emotion, disturbing emotion.
Yeah.
It comes on and off, you know, on a longer term, isn't it? Whereas the anxiety is a short term one, you know. It deals with racing, boom, 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 you know. And all that associates with fear, you know. That arises, it arises soon, and it goes down soon to these things.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. You see, yeah. So and the, because I don't know whether to share. That. The other day, I went through anxiety, and yeah. I get it off within 15 minutes.
Only 15?
Yeah.
So next time you have to beat your PB, you know, your personal best, and do it in 10 minutes.
You are a practitioner, you know, it comes so quickly, you know. It deals with, it's with fear, you know. Fear, this thing, okay. And then the thing is you have to sort of bring in all, it's from the mind, you know. So you have to solve the problem very quickly, you know.
Yep.
It's just, it's fear, it's not the real thing, it's to fear, you know. So you bring in the knowing that, the mind is under control, this thing, and then the eight winds do not be moved by the eight winds, no? Praise, blame, all you know, profit loss and all these things. And then the Buddha was telling us, if you have any problem, don't keep to heart, talk it out, you know. Deal with the situation, this thing, okay? How do I say? Use equanimity too, the teaching, okay? And then it's sort of, you are under control, this thing. And once it is, you know that it is just, by talking out this thing, you know, I won't go into detail, okay? You can solve the problem very quickly.
Excellent, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, Adam. I hope I don't annoy people by asking questions or making the comment.
No trouble. Thank you. Eddie, we'll have to invite you to give the talk next Friday.
Thank you very much, Aaron Brum.
Nice. Okay, quick one, yeah?
In any capacity?
There is, but sometimes that's a difficult thing to do this time of night.
I didn't necessarily mean tonight, but at some stage.
Yes, but I mean, how many monks are there here? And how many people are here? So we sometimes get really overloaded. So I'm not quite sure when that can be arranged, but it can be done. But it's sometimes easier just to ask a question, because one thing which I've found that most people have the same problems. So whenever we have these, you know, question boxes, people ask the same questions. So sometimes if you can ask the question, then it means that it's shared with so many other people.
I can ask the question, but I don't want to inspire anxiety.
Okay.
That's why I choose to keep it to myself.
Well, what you can do next time, I know somebody did this here once, they didn't have a chance to ask the question, so they actually typed it in on their computer, and it was on this computer over here afterwards.
Okay.
And they said it was like, I think they said Mohammed from Saudi Arabia, and it was just somebody sitting over here. And they thought that they were very smart. They said, that way they're sure to get their question answered.
Okay. Sure.
So next week, you can type in the question next week, and you can actually say, Donald Trump from Mar-a-Lago, and I'm sure will be answered. Or something like that. Okay. So it's a bit over time, but anyway, thank you again for listening, and I hope you found it useful for another one. Okay. Please, you can ask your question, but then I'm going. No, it's okay. You can ask your question.
How do you let go of your attachment and anxiety around physical pain?
Physical pain. Look, physical pain is very much in the present moment. You can imagine what it's going to be like next. But sometimes it's totally different. Look, one of the earliest experiences I had as a monk was having really, really, really bad toothache. Okay, it's only toothache, but for me that meant I couldn't sleep that night. And I couldn't even meditate on my breathing. I couldn't even walk slowly. Thank goodness, there was no medication in the medicine cupboard at this monastery. It was a young monastery, very poor. So I was stuck with this pain in my tooth, and my whole jaw was exploding, and I didn't have anything to do. All my options were just finished. I didn't know what to do. But I did remember hearing, not just from an Ajahn Chah, from many people telling me, let go. That's just the words. But then you did it. You had to. You had no choice. And that's one of the reasons why it worked. There's no other option. So I kind of say thank you for putting me in this situation where you can't go forward, you can't go back, you can't stand still. You let go. And the change was so instantaneous, from pain to bliss. And I'm not exaggerating, because I'm a monk, it was such a long time ago. But that took away the fear about pain, the anxiety. You know that pain is something, please excuse me, this is my experience, pain is something we add to our experience. And if we know how to let go, if we have to let go, we've got no choice but to let go, it can vanish. And I can't convince you of that, but if you actually do it, you're never afraid of pain anymore. You don't like it. You try and avoid it. But in the very end, you know that you can turn off on that letting go button and it vanishes.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So now I'll keep my promises so we can bow three times. And then those who wish to stay can stay. Those who wish to go can go. And that includes me.
Patipano Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sangam Namah.